Good morning, Ava. It is Saturday, July 18, 2026, and today's morning signal has one big idea running through almost everything. Artificial intelligence is no longer just a contest over which model is smartest. The harder constraints are power, hardware, capital, trust, distribution, and whether the product works reliably enough to earn a return.
Exactly. And before we get into it, today's written brief checked 34 podcasts and found 7 episodes inside the strict 24-hour window. For had usable, episode matched public transcripts. We are only using claims from those verified sources. 2 title match transcripts were rejected because the publisher or host did not match, and the official Goldman Sachs episode had subtitles disabled. So the evidence boundary matters today.
Let us start with markets. On the Real Iceman playbook, Steve Iceman used large bank non-accrual data to argue that a broad American credit cycle is not already underway. He cited J.P. Morgan at $9.4 billion of non-accrual loans, down 5% year-over-year and 2% sequentially, and Bank of America at $5.8 billion, down 4% year-over-year and flat sequentially.
But Iceman's conclusion was narrower than nothing can go wrong. His point was that large bank consumer and commercial credit are concurrent indicators and still look benign. The harder-to-see risk is private credit, especially software exposure. So the recession watch moves away from the transparent bank books and toward opaque lenders and the economics of AI projects.
Right. And on that same Real Iceman playbook episode, he described very strong bank returns. The return on tangible common equity figures he cited were 23% for J.P. Morgan, 16.5% for Bank of America, 17.7% for Wells Fargo, 13% for Citi, 25.5% for Goldman Sachs, and 26.6% for Morgan Stanley.
His valuation mechanism matters. Iceman frames price to tangible book as a function of sustainable return on tangible equity. Goldman, J.P. Morgan, and Morgan Stanley deserve higher multiples in that framework because returns exceed 20%. But strong trading, investment banking, mergers, initial public offerings, and AI financing do not prove that the projects being financed will ultimately earn acceptable returns.
That distinction is the heart of the trade. Banks can get paid for funding the build-out before we know whether the build-out generates enough cash. And the Real Iceman playbook gave a sharp example of budget reallocation. Iceman said IBM pre-announced earnings per share of $2.93 against $3.01 expected, and revenue of $17.2 billion against $17.9 billion expected.
He linked IBM's 25% stock decline and the broader software sell-off to clients shifting late-quarter capital spending toward servers, storage, and memory. On the same episode, Ericsson's earnings fell 7% and revenue fell 6%, with weak guidance tied to component inflation, while ASML beat and raised guidance.
So the causal chain is simple enough to underwrite. AI infrastructure scarcity pulls customer budgets into hardware, component inflation hurts buyers, software and network vendors miss, and upstream semiconductor equipment benefits. The falsifier, from the written brief, is rapid normalization in component pricing alongside stable software renewals and expansion.
And the Real Iceman playbook also showed why a headline beat is not enough when the hurdle is higher. Iceman said Elevance beat, but fell because guidance captured less than the quarterly upside and membership declined 1% after pricing increases. United Health beat and raised guidance as pricing helped margins despite flat revenue. G Aerospace grew revenue 24% and raised guidance, but still fell because investors wanted more. Netflix met expectations, reduced the frequency of engagement disclosure, and fell 8% after hours.
That is a useful portfolio rule. Compare the result with the implied bar, not just consensus. And reduced disclosure can itself be a governance signal even when the quarter looks acceptable.
Now payments. On the Real Iceman playbook, Iceman treated Circle's trust bank approval as strategically positive, but smaller than the competitive threat from an integrated group involving Stripe, Visa, MasterCard, Coinbase, and BlackRock. He described Circle's economics as interest on treasury-backed USDC reserves minus BlackRock's 18 basis point money market fee.
A bank charter might internalize that fee, but it does not create distribution. Iceman's conclusion was that Circle is too small to fight integrated payment networks alone and should look for a larger partner. On that episode, Circle was discussed near $63 versus a $31 initial public offering price and a prior peak near $270.
Both the Real Iceman playbook and the All In podcast discussed unconfirmed reports of a PayPal bid. Eisman cited $60.50 per share and roughly 11 times estimated 2026 earnings. The All-In panel discussed a roughly $53 billion offer and more than 400 million PayPal consumer accounts.
Emphasis on unconfirmed. The strategic logic is clearer than the transaction status. In the All-In discussion, Stripe's merchant base, PayPal and Venmo consumers, Braintree, a possible block point-of-sale contribution, and stablecoin rails could create more transactions inside one network and reduce reliance on Visa and MasterCard rails. But without a named buyer group, filed terms, financing, and an antitrust path, it is optionality, not an investable floor.
Let us connect that to wealth infrastructure. On Masters in Business, Barry Ritholtz interviewed Altruist founder Jason Wenk. Wenk described the independent advisor market as roughly $10 trillion across about 35,000 firms, with Schwab and Fidelity holding about 85% of standalone registered investment advisor assets and Schwab above 50%.
And he explained how the plumbing makes money. According to Wenk on Masters in Business, incumbent custodians monetize idle cash spreads, fund distribution, and payment for order flow, while advisors often buy separate accounting, billing, reporting, and tax systems. Altruist tries to integrate those functions, support fractional shares, reduce idle cash, and earn across custody, software, asset management, and automation.
Wenk also said Altruist raised more than $600 million over 7 years and estimated that a credible new custodian requires at least 5 years and $250 million. That tells you why this apparently boring infrastructure is hard to disrupt. The moat is not a flashy interface. It is engineering, capital, licensing, security, and trust.
So our market setup is unusually coherent. The Real Eisman playbook says broad bank credit is benign and financing activity is strong. It also says AI spending is crowding out parts of software. Masters in Business says modern financial infrastructure can create measurable operating leverage, but only after years of investment. The common question is where capital earns a return rather than merely where it is being spent.
Which takes us to technology and AI. On the All In podcast, David Sachs, Chamath Palihapitiya, David Friedberg, and Jason Calacanis discussed Demis Hassabis's proposal for a federally overseen, industry-funded self-regulatory organization modeled on FINRA.
The All-In panel described a 30-day pre-release submission period for frontier models, quarterly updated risk benchmarks, and tests for cyber, national security, and biological risks. Sachs supported the concept only with conditions: broad representation including startups and open source, review limited to genuinely frontier models, scope confined to catastrophic risks, voluntary operation before it becomes mandatory, and replacement of a new agency rather than adding another layer.
Palihapitiya's concern on All-In was speed, because well-capitalized firms can shape regulation into a barrier to entry. The investment issue is not simply whether self-regulation happens. Certification cost, release delay, board composition, and the definition of frontier can become moats. Capability-based scope and startup representation reduce capture. Fixed compute thresholds or a state-by-state patchwork favor incumbents.
Trust is the second layer. On All-In, the panel covered an acknowledged Grok build data handling failure in which code bases were reportedly sent to remote servers despite privacy expectations. Elon Musk said previously uploaded data had been deleted, and the harness was open-sourced.
Palihapitiya's point on that All-In discussion was that a zero data retention promise is not enough if non-obvious leak paths remain. Sachs cited private evaluations, tenant-level trust boundaries, decoupled orchestration, and customer fine-tuning rights as ways enterprises can retain control. So data sovereignty becomes architecture, not just contract language.
The All-In podcast also cited Ramp chief executive Eric Glyman saying AI token spend among Ramp customers rose 21-fold over the prior year. The panel's implication was that uncontrolled model selection can become a real expense and margin risk. They discussed higher memory max as one possible route to more local workloads, lower token cost, and less leakage, but the written brief correctly labels that as a scenario rather than a verified purchasing forecast.
The Verge cast approached trust through Apple's trade secret suit against OpenAI. Nilay Patel and David Pierce emphasized that Apple's complaint is one-sided and that the merits still need discovery and adjudication. Their legal framing was that Apple is using trade secret law because there is no shipped OpenAI device for a patent claim and no clearly copied code or expression for copyright.
On the Vergecast, Patel and Pierce expect the case to test the boundary between manufacturing knowledge employees can carry in their heads and protected materials they cannot take. The commercial question is whether this becomes a years-long constraint on OpenAI's hardware ambitions, but the next pleadings and any request for injunctive relief matter more than speculation.
The Vergecast also gave us the cleanest consumer product test. Patel and Pierce found Apple's beta Siri more capable at some multi-step tasks, but less predictable on simple commands, such as reminders. Their car example showed how replacing a known command path with a cloud-mediated model adds routing and security ambiguity, even if a local button remains.
That is the ceiling versus floor problem. A fantastic demo raises the capability ceiling. But consumers stop using an assistant when the reliability floor collapses. Nobody wants to debug a timer, a light, or a reminder every morning.
And on the Vergecast, they applied that test to reports that OpenAI's first device could be a screenless, battery-powered smart speaker with cameras and sensors. A mostly home-based device may ease some connectivity problems, but it inherits music services, smart home standards, microphones, local versus cloud processing, privacy, and predictable action requirements.
Their skepticism was not that conversation cannot improve. It was that conversation alone may not overcome phones, HomePods, Google Home, Alexa, and the existing ecosystem. The measurable catalyst is repeat use beyond timers, music, and retrieval, not launch day attention.
Masters in Business gave the enterprise counterexample. Jason Wink said Altruist can validate accounts, transfers, and bank links in under 2 minutes, with more than 98% of workflows avoiding human intervention. He said Hazel, Altruist's AI product, targets tax planning, financial plans, data gathering, and client responses, with some complex tasks reaching a claimed unit cost of $3 to $5.
The critical difference is structure. In Wenke's Masters in Business account, enterprise custody workflows have defined inputs, auditable outputs, transaction rails, and a financial incentive to fix failures. That makes operating leverage measurable. His argument that cloud-native microservices are easier to defend than old monolithic mainframes still needs controls testing, but strong authentication, security keys, smaller services, and restrictions on high-risk phone workflows have a clear mechanism.
So the investable AI question is becoming, who owns the scarce complement? Power, components, proprietary workflow data, security, distribution, and verified reliability can all retain value even as model prices compress.
Let us add geopolitics and policy. On All In, the panel argued that electricity and permission to build are the next scarce inputs. Chamath Palihapitiya said near-term energizable data center capacity commands an extreme premium because many projects are delayed or abandoned. David Sachs argued that New York's announced hyperscale data center moratorium would push construction toward places that allow behind-the-meter generation.
David Friedberg's point on All In was brutally physical. Graphics processors have little economic value until they can be powered. The panel's precise estimates for the American energy deficit and project cancellations were not independently verified in the written brief, but their directional mechanism aligns with Eisman's budget reallocation evidence. Scarcity is moving upstream into chips, generation, and interconnection.
On the same All In episode, Sachs argued that restricting domestic data center construction while limiting advanced chip exports to allies could reduce U.S.-aligned compute capacity in both places. That is an attributed policy view, not a settled fact. The falsifier is visible. Allied capacity expands under the controls and American projects reach operation without longer queues.
The Vergecast discussed another regulatory lever, Federal Communications Commission control over broadcast ownership and merger review. Patel and Pierce argued that removing the 39% broadcast reach cap would consolidate ownership without solving competition from YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram, where user-generated content has a different cost base.
They also criticized reported hospitality provided to FCC officials by companies with transactions under review. Those are the host's interpretations of reported events, not a legal finding. The market takeaway is narrower. Regulatory permission can move media asset values, but consolidation cannot repair a structurally inferior content cost model.
Now the cross currents. First, the real Eisman playbook and All In together describe a strange split. AI financing supports bank fees and returns. Scarce hardware and power pull capital spending away from some software. Private credit lenders may hold the opaque exposure. So financials and semiconductor equipment can work at the same time that application vendors and software lenders struggle.
Second, All In, the Vergecast, and Masters in Business all point toward verifiable control. Open systems do not mean leak boundaries. The Grokdal incident shows the cost of leakage. Apple's lawsuit shows provenance risk in employee knowledge and supply chains. Wenk's custody model shows the regulated answer: integrate data and execution, authenticate strongly, restrict access, and keep an audit trail.
Third, All-In and Masters in Business show two modernization paths. Acquiring PayPal could buy consumer accounts and distribution, but it also inherits architecture and culture. Altruist's clean sheet path can create operating leverage, but it consumes time, capital, licensing effort, and trust. The integration outcome matters more than the deal announcement.
Fourth, the Vergecast, Masters in Business, and the Real Iceman playbook put reliability between capability and free cash flow. Siri shows higher capability can reduce usefulness if simple tasks fail. Altruist shows narrow automation can save labor and errors. IBM shows enterprise budgets are moving before the return is proven.
And fifth, distribution remains harder than creating the product primitive. The Real Iceman playbook says Circle can improve reserve economics, but still lacks network scale. All-In says PayPal has hundreds of millions of relationships, but an aging interaction model. Masters in Business says Altruist distributes through advisors whose clients add assets over time. The Vergecast says a new OpenAI device still has to overcome established ecosystems.
The absence signal is as important as any headline. Today's usable episodes did not provide a company-level bridge from incremental AI capital spending to incremental free cash flow for hyperscalers or model labs. They were much more precise about shortages, power, token cost, financing, and regulation than realized return on compute. That is still the central underwriting gap.
Let us finish with what we are watching. The Real Iceman Playbook plans a July 20th interview with Baird Sustainable Energy and Mobility Analyst Ben Callow on how AI data center construction is changing energy markets. That directly tests the power bottleneck thesis.
And the Real Iceman Playbook has a July 22nd interview scheduled with autonomous payments analyst Ken Suchoski. We want evidence on PayPal, stablecoins, and agentic payments consolidation, while keeping unconfirmed transaction claims out of the base case.
In the next bank reporting cycle, watch sequential consumer and commercial non-accruals at JP Morgan, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and Citi. Broad deterioration would falsify Iceman's claim that the visible bank books remain benign, and the harder risk sits elsewhere.
In the next IBM and software updates, watch whether server, storage, and memory purchases remain a substitute for software spending or whether late June was only timing. If component pricing falls while software renewals and expansion stabilize, the crowd-out thesis weakens.
For Apple and OpenAI, watch the next pleading and any request for injunctive relief. For AI governance, watch who selects the board, which federal body oversees it, whether state laws are preempted, and whether frontier is defined by capability rather than spending.
For New York data centers, track whether projects migrate, secure exemptions, or arrange behind-the-meter power elsewhere. For PayPal, require a named buyer group, file terms, financing structure, and antitrust route before treating the reported price as a floor.
And for consumer AI, measure repeat behavior. Does Beta Siri complete multi-step work while preserving reminders, smart home controls, and app intents? If users do not return after novelty fades, capability has not crossed the reliability bridge.
The portfolio message is selective, not universally bullish or bearish. Prefer transparent balance sheets over opaque credit. Prefer scarce compliments and audited workflows over vague AI exposure. Treat rumored deals as optionality. And demand evidence that spending produces retention, task completion, unit cost savings, or free cash flow.
That is Morning Signal for Saturday, July 18th. The models are improving, but today's evidence says the scarce assets increasingly sit around the model: electricity, components, trust boundaries, regulated infrastructure, and distribution.
Have a great Saturday. We will be watching the bottlenecks, the earnings hurdles, and the evidence that turns capability into cash. See you next time.